Hello and welcome to this miracle podcast from Serpentine Galleries, part of a series of audio explorations on the subject of miracles, including audio dramas, live musical performances, poetry and discussions. All of the material in this series was originally recorded at or produced for the Serpentine's Miracle Marathon Festival 2016. I'm Tabitha Thorley-Bangora, and with me is Lucia Pietrosti, Public Programmes Curator at the Serpentine.
Hi, Tabitha.
Hi, Lucia. Today's miracle is a piece by Jessie Darling entitled Miracle Hour. Darling's practice is concerned with the human condition and how it is mediated through the structures, narratives and technologies that govern lived experience.
This performance features Jessie Darling and William Kerbeck. The piece has two main characters. On the one hand, the contractor, a sort of stand-in for an art worker, an artist or a writer concerned with the economics and the politics of the industry. And on the other, a kind of queer Batman cast in a semi-comic light. So here's Miracle Hour.
Good evening. I don't appear in public as myself anymore, so I'm doing this instead. I hope you're having a really nice evening. Just want to thank my co-reader, Habib William Kerbeck. He's been kind enough to step in on a script I've been writing this afternoon. Thank you.
The contractor has written nothing in 2 years, in fulfillment of a vow made in public, that from now on there were to be no more contributions to the discourse. The contractor retired their body and their speech from what the contractor privately refers to as the travelling discourse value creation circus, in protest of its tendency and prerogative to reduce contractors to symbols of themselves and of the other for whom the body of the contractor is supposed to stand in, since this other is not, one assumes, here in the room, which is not an unreasonable assumption based on the median demographics of who shows up to these things. Never mind the tired proletarian jokes about the emperor's new clothes, never made outright in contractor circles, but always on the edge of the conversation, like a frame. The most potent snake oil is manufactured and traded here in the travelling discourse value creation circus, without which plenty of contractors would cease to have a career. Snake oil is a traditional folk remedy in Chinese medicine, used by the Chinese contractors who built the first transcontinental railroad. It was said to bring relief to joint pain, resulting perhaps from the hard physical labor involved in setting up the infrastructure of American modernity. White American contractors of medical sales, for whom the rumored miracle benefits of snake oil represented a threat to business, set about defaming the remedy as fraudulent, exotic quackery, which had the unintended effect of capturing the white public imaginary, since the miracle of exoticism was seen as exciting and even erotic under certain sanctioned conditions. It didn't take long for other white contractors of medical sales to start producing and selling fake snake oil as cure oil and wonder drug. And it is due to these fraudulent contractors that snake oil acquired its vernacular bad name. This story could function as metaphor were it not for the fact that this is more or less how the capitalism of colonial modernity has operated since inception, and the art world, which is the site of the contractor's own business, as well as the business to which, broadly speaking, this conference means to attend, is its most avant-garde manifestation.
Batman is a secret name, not a real one, because the other Batman was a strong white man with a boyfriend living in the city, and it was cool. The other Batman had a big house and a sleek car and a tight suit looking like something poured from a tube. The other Batman had no special powers except money, and he was a machine of the city like others. He was an instrument of his own war. If Batman had a vagina, he wouldn't let anyone touch it, and he would keep his dick on the wall like a crucifix where it would shine down on all those in need. With high walls and health insurance, he didn't need magic or pray or wear headphones or repeat himself often while walking the street. The body of the big Batman was holy because it was whole. Only GB had a hole in him, and nothing came out except God.
When Picasso and the wild contractors of the early modern Fauve gang broke from the shackles of the recently denaturalized European reel, what an ecstasy of critique, what a pornography of possibility. Jagged and glorious as the rectilinear skyline, busy erecting itself in every major city, their work stole from the stolen trophies of colonialisms whose makers were long since displaced or worse. Perhaps something of the aura of death remained in the objects, which Picasso and friends seem to have misunderstood as the essence of life itself. Perhaps death was already beginning to become obscure, taboo, unbearable. It seems to the contractor that the whole of Western modernity has been an attempt to banish death, but since this project has failed, death has been relegated to the place of unspeakable and unquantifiable things, where it remains and reigns supreme. The unbearable is not that which cannot be borne, since there are plenty of contractors who have had to bear it full in the open face and in broad daylight before their own children. The unbearable is that of which one cannot speak.
In the mornings, they made everyone stand in line and they called out the ones who got it wrong. Princess Michael shone in the early sun with her back straight and her brown eyes bright and brittle. She never had a hair out of place, but she was too beautiful for their world. And even with her long toes on the line, she was like a pillar of fire in a row of boulder. She knew that what was coming, because it was always coming, and coming at her. So she stared straight out ahead and shone, and her eyes bored a hole in the world. When it came, it was the same as always. Big came and stood in her face, spat flex. What did I tell your faggot ass about that faggot hair? Princess Michael's hair was non-regulation. The boys all craned their eyes out on stalks, and the muscles in their necks bulged and knotted as they tried not to turn their heads. Big took his chalk and drew a circle the size of a penny on the asphalt by his foot. You put your faggot nose in that circle, and you keep it there until I say go.
Human Kierkegaard, both loose of God but not lost, defined the miraculous as a divine intervention that contravenes the laws of nature. But then again, one would first have to define these laws in full, which has been the project of the epoch. To know is derived from an old English verb to perceive a thing as identical to another, and then, later, to distinguish a thing from another. The violence of naming and identifying, a colonial scientism that seeks to name every living thing, and the dead all pinned down like butterflies in a glass case, gasping and panting in clouds of steam and gobbling coal like it was hamburger, the golems of the modern were man-made miracles, aping God the man and man the monster.
Sometimes Jerry would come around and lean heavy on the afternoon, saying, "Come on, Batman, baby, I came all this way for you." Sometimes touch, but not every time, which was better. Mostly the eyes were worse than hands, reaching for what they thought, but not taking nothing, and leaving the mucus of wanting in the air like a low dew. Keep eyes low and try not to give something. Batman or Jerry might come surging and steaming out of flies and shirt sleeves, looking for the thing people always seem to want and somehow find. Well, Batman stood emptied of it every time, turning slowly invisible behind the eyes, beyond the body, somewhere eyeless and soft in the airspace above whole hard world.
The contractor has often been in some form of therapy, another invention of the modern project in which the mind is brought into the realm of quantifiable things alongside commodities, coins, identities. The notion of the talking cure holds that nothing is unspeakable. It is, in fact, the unspeaking that causes trouble, and if only this unspeaking can be reversed, then the life force can flow once more, with language as its happy analogue. Because the contractor is resistant to this approach, they were referred to cognitive behavioural therapy, for which certain subjects need not necessarily be speakable, so long as they are functional.
Heavy rightness in belly was what Batman knew. With all the world well, it was like a rounding wholeness, the soundless, voiceless choral, so pitch perfect that all parts rang out as one. That was apex and rare. Worth it for moments in the sun, knees bent, peeling a fruit open wide to the night as it sidled in, shadows long as a drunken grin. But more often, there was static and interference, people streaming out crazily through the holes in the faces all over the street, the bus streaming out across the counter in complex transactions of crackling speed that hummed in the airspace above the crude exchange of words, money, groceries, cigarettes on the counter. Batman kept eyes low and handed coin over, smiled into the guesswork, and listened for the rhythm that meant, okay, okay, go.
Writing in the contractor's experience is equated to a stacking up of claims like a budget report. According to the modern conventions to which the contractor must cleave, since all conventions of which the contractor has any knowledge can now be properly described as modern, these claims should be grounded in a certain linear history. Similar claims made by others in the past, or observations grounded in vernacular experience, quantifiable according to one's subject parameters. At the end of it, the conclusion is slapped down hard with a resounding thud of punctuation, like a grand total at the foot of the bill. According to the ministrations of contractors in the history business, whose observations are grounded in mud and rubble and the dust of bones, the history of writing is a history of invoicing. And the earliest written documents are all records of goods and services owed or delivered. Invoice sounds for all the English-speaking world as though it is derived from vox, voix, a sound produced in the body, a form of agency by which one's presence is expressed and understood. As though to speak is to signify, is to be compensated in capital. And the history of modernity, after all, is in part a story of who speaks and who is compensated, which is to say, it's a story of who does not speak and who is not compensated. No modernity without its other, a long shadow cast by the rectilinear stack of bones. But invoice is in fact derived from envoyer, from the Latin inviare, derived from via. Path, road. The only way out is through.
Batman dipped head between legs and blue nose, three fingers into the bowl beneath, which was beginning to swirl and spatter with slow, hot blood. The lights were all blown out in the bathrooms, but Batman kept time with a lighter, watching the water turn red until the flame bit thumb. Then back to the dripping darkness, wet minutes plopping along, irregular like clicked tongues while the kitchen fan roared on. Through the skinny walls, Batman heard a zipper and a clank like glass on metal, something going down, nose and lipstick sniffing and sucking in the next stall over. The baby was seeping out unctuous through a hole in Batman's body, pain in wide concentric circles like a wireless signal. Batman sat very still. If they didn't know, they wouldn't mind. And they didn't know it yet, nor ever would, if the blood would flush like nothing happened.
The contractor wonders about the seventh proposition presented in conclusion of Wittgenstein's Tractatus, one of the many scholarly works the contractor has never tried to read. Whereof one cannot speak, wrote Wittgenstein, one must remain silent. The contractor wonders about this imperative clause, in this, Wittgenstein's seventh proposition, and about the circumstances under which one can or cannot speak. Wittgenstein began his Tractatus while fighting in the trenches during World War I. He finished it while stationed in Cassino as a prisoner of war, where he received news of his brother's suicide and his lover's death in a plane crash. Wittgenstein became suicidal and on his return set about divesting himself of his family money, one of the many instances throughout history in which someone has attempted to give up their privilege. The contractor wonders about Wittgenstein's trauma response, about the feeling that snaps itself shut inside the body and the cautery catching on the valve. No more in or out, no more and that's it. No words worming their way or buzzing like flies on the corp. Whereof one cannot speak, silent, like the nightliest dark, not breathing, not dying, playing dead in a box in the brain.
Well, the can't just write anyhow on any day, so the words come bunching up the back of my drawers until it creaks and strains, until it leaks and stains. Then, like a last boil, when it comes oozing, it stinks so badly you think something must have died, but this is truly the sign of life in its continuation. We're all teeming zombie hives of crawling life, all millions and millions of us, each containing a multitude or two, and several all as hell walking this story.
The first great war of modernity began in 1914. By which time, barbed wire, blue jeans, Coca-Cola, and the automobile were already well-established commodities on the fresh planet America and beyond. Wittgenstein was on the Russian front when a young stretcher bearer named Alfred Wolfson was discharged for shell shock. Wolfson was haunted by auditory hallucinations, and these worsened until the screams became a chorus, the sounds of men dying in the trenches. Wolfson's condition proved untreatable until he started vocalizing his own ghosts, the dead screaming up the throat and out the mouth hole. Exorcism, catharsis, the unspeakable spoke aloud. The bel canto style of Wolfson's singing teachers, pioneered by the castrati who began life as forcibly emasculated slaves of the Byzantine Empire, had by that time calcified into strict vocal range categories, a preventative system of classification. The last castrato died in 1922, at which point the British Empire, at its largest extent, presided over one in four people in the entire population of the world.
Miracle of the life that gives itself up before it hits the world. Princess Michael's mother used to say she'd wished she'd miscarried. Princess Michael drew her beautiful lips back, and her teeth grazed the asphalt. Big was waiting for her to kiss the floor, but she held herself straight as a line.
The mathematician John Littlewood defines a miracle as a significant occurrence, occurring at a frequency of about one in a million. Littlewood supposes that a human being is alert for 8 hours a day, although there are doubtless people in this room who've been alert and in service for 14 hours or more. During these waking hours, reckons Littlewood, a person will see or hear one or more exceptional or unexceptional event per second, which means that in 35 days, most of us will experience a miracle or two. And of course, the odds go up for those of us who work all hours. 35 days is the approximate length of a menstrual cycle in which conception will take place or not. Without a single exception, everyone in this room and down the wire has been party to the major miracle of their own conception and the subsequent miracle of their birth. Birth and conception are both natural events, and nature, like the feminine, counterpart to masculine, the earth, counterpart to the world, the savage, counterpart to the civil, and the body, counterpart to the mind, belongs in the dark zero of the 1-0 binary that cleaves and hierarchizes the modern. In solidarity and submission, I fall into the miracle hole and stay there at the end of the world.
At the end, the 1-2-1-2-1-2, and in the end, it's just me and you. No speaking in the end, nor screaming, and no one is sorry.
No gods in the miracle hole, only unspeakable.
And what you can't say, you... What you can't say... And what you can't say, you... You can't say.
Thank you for listening to this Miracle podcast. For more Serpentine Radio podcasts, please visit radio.serpentinegalleries.org.